turn over to the 16th chapter. This is an allegory, and I think it's probably one of the most revolting allegories that any man of God ever used. But when you're reading it, remember that we're dealing with a nation that is in rebellion against God, has turned completely away from Him unto sin. What this chapter really reveals is God's attitude towards sin and what sin can do for an individual or a people in completely separating them from Him, and how God looks upon that. The last Sunday morning we closed with the 15th chapter, an allegory of the vine wood that was burned on both ends and scorched in the middle, therefore was completely useless. And he was using that as an allegory illustrating the condition of Israel. Now here's a second allegory. This one is an allegory of a foundling child, a babe that was cast out by its parents, discovered by Jehovah, cleaned up, reared, and he dressed it and made it his queen, gave it the place of a queen. Now, Jerusalem is used here as a metonymy for the whole people of Israel, the whole nation. And so keep that in mind when you're studying this, that here this illustrates the people as a whole. Now, when this child grew up and became Jehovah's bride, then it turned to adultery, committed adultery against God, and then finally became just a harlot, having these harlotry relations with all of the political and religious nations round about them. So God then is going to destroy them or cast them off. But the thing is, he's giving us a picture of the terribleness of sin and the condition of these people. Now you have a third allegory. This is the allegory of the two sisters. And the two sisters are Judah and Israel. And he points out in it that Judah has become more wicked than Israel was, and even more wicked than Sodom was. And I think there's some points to be considered in that. So we'll have these two allegories today, and the allegory of last Sunday. All of these now are, the prophet is trying to portray to the people, get them to see and to understand how wicked the people have become in God's sight. Now before that, you remember, he had dealt with their idolatry in chapters 8 through 11, and they transported in a vision and had seen the idolatry of the people in Jerusalem. Then, following that, you have his condemnation of the idolatry on the hills as he prophesied to the hills of Judah and condemned the idolatry there. Then from there he turned to the false prophets and the false prophetesses. Now, these were the contributing causes for the condition in Israel. They were idolatry and false teachers, people putting things before God and then listening to false teachers. Now, I think surely that we can get a lesson from this. Principles don't change. So just remember that what God is dealing with in Ezekiel, he could be dealing with today in any country that he has blessed and turns away from him to atheism, infidelity, or whatever it may be. So I think we've got a good lesson here. Although, this is a chapter very seldom read, and I presume is never preached on, and I never have. I never heard one on it. But I have taught it a few times, and all I'm going to do this morning is read it with a few comments. It's a very long one. Again, the word of Jehovah came unto me, saying, Son of man, cause Jerusalem to know her abomination, and say, Thus saith the Lord Jehovah unto Jerusalem. Now, as I said, Jerusalem is a metonymy for the whole people of the whole nation. Right? As the head, it symbolizes them. Thy birth and thy nativity is of the land of the Canaanite. The Amorite was thy father. Thy mother was a Hittite. Now, the Jews were actually Arameans, but what he's saying here, that your ancestors were idolaters. And now Abraham wasn't, but others were. Now, so you came into this country, and you have idolatrous people around you whose pattern you followed. And as for thy nativity, in the day thou was born, thy navel was not cut, neither wast thou washed in water to cleanse thee. Thou was not salted at all, nor swaddled at all. In other words, now you were as a babe that's rejected by its parents, cast out as a, what they call a foundling child whom Jehovah discovered. Now think about it, there's no baby like that that's still in the blood of its birth and all of that, that's pretty, but ugly and all of that. But when God discovered it here, he took it. Now notice further, no eye pitied thee to do any of these things unto thee, to have compassion upon thee, but thou wast cast out in the open field, for that thy person was abhorred in the day that thou wast born. In other words, now that's an allegory. In other words, I don't try to press any of these too far, but the point is that from the very beginning, as a people, they were rejected by people. They went down into Egypt and became slaves down there, came back into the land of Canaan, and cast those people out, but nobody really liked them, but they courted the favor of the nations around them. This is the thing God is condemning. Right now, second, he moves on, therefore it owes its preservation and its glory to Jehovah. Whatever Jerusalem as the people of God had become, they owe that to God and not to themselves. And when I passed by thee, now Jehovah speaking of this child out here in his blood there and all of that, and saw thee weltering in thy blood, I said unto thee, though thou art in thy blood, live. Yea, I said unto thee, though thou art in thy blood, live. You know that Ezekiel repeats himself so often. That's for emphasis. That's to make the people realize the importance of what's being said. I cause thee to multiply as that which groweth in the field, and thou didst increase and wax great, and thou attainest to excellent ornament, thy breasts were fashioned, and thy hair was grown. Yet thou wast naked and bare, that is, unmarried. It was unclean. God had simply done that, but he hadn't made a covenant with them. Now come that naked and bare, so if it means they were unmarried that time. Now when I passed by thee and looked upon thee, behold, thy time was the time of love. In other words, you reached maturity. And I spread my skirt over thee and covered thy nakedness. That was an indication of a betrothal. And you immediately think of Ruth, you remember, and Boaz. Renown went forth among the nations for thy beauty, for it was perfect. Through my majesty, which I put upon thee, saith the Lord Jehovah. Right now, he says, now, it was not because of you, because of what I did for you. Well, that same thing is true, as I think we're learning from the book of Romans, that actually we are not made beautiful spiritually of ourselves. It's the gift of God. That's what Paul is going to say in our lesson today. It's the free gift of God. Right now, what you are, because of what I made you, and not by your own power, not because of that. Now further, now apostasy. And so she becomes really as a harlot. But thou didst trust in thy beauty, and played the harlot because of thy renown, and poured out thy whoredoms on everyone that passed by. His it was. I say, anyone that came by, you committed whoredom with that individual. And thou didst take of thy garments and madest for thee high places, decked with divers colors, and played the harlot upon them. The last thing shall not come, neither shall it be so. In other words, I'm going to bring that to an end. You've taken the things I gave you for your own beauty and glory, and bestowed that upon idols. I think we could take this allegory and make a parallel to it of the development of the church during the middle of the Dark Ages. The apostate church, the Roman Catholic Church, coming on down, is an example of this very thing that happened to the early church. Now, unless we're careful, it can happen again to the Church of the Lord in our generation. It takes time, but it can be developed, and I think we are looking to other things than the glory of God entirely too often. Father moves on. Thou dost also take thy fair jewels of my gold and of my silver, which I have given thee, and made it for the images of men, and hast played the harlot with them, with these idols. And thou tookest thy broidered garments, and covered them, and hast set mine oil and mine incense before them. That which God gave to them, and should have been used in his service, they turned around and used it in the service of idolatry, and in that they're committing whoredom or harlotry with these idols. An ugly picture. Couldn't be more ugly. But my bread also, which I gave thee, thine flour and oil and honey, wherewith I fed thee, thou didst even set it before them for a sweet savor, and thus it was, saith the Lord Jehovah. What you've done now. Moreover, thou hast taken my sons, thou hast taken thy sons and thy daughters, whom thou hast borne unto me, and these thou hast thou sacrificed unto them to be devoured. Now there's where he reaches the climax of his accusation. Now it is true, Ahaz offered his son, the king that followed him, Manasseh, offered his. Now that's pointed out a number of times in the Old Testament. That, you can't think of anything, to me at least, any more abominable than child sacrifice. And yet children being sacrificed today by their parents for money, for what they earn and go, and their pleasures and all that, and leaving the kid to go there. You don't have to burn the kid to sacrifice him. They're sacrificing him today on the altar of their own pleasures and their own disposition, what they want. Don't be bothered with them. So cast them out. And so I think you can see a parallel between what they were doing back there and our nation and the nation today are doing today. And terrible picture. Were thy whoredoms a small matter, that thou hast slain thy children and delivered them up in causing them to pass through the fire unto them? Is that a small thing to cause it to pass through the fire? We'll offer them as a sacrifice. So that's what you've done now in this. All right? And in all thine abominations and thy whoredoms, thou hast not remembered the days of thy youth, when thou wast naked and bare and was weltering in thy blood. You've forgotten that. And in your prosperity, you've left God out. It seems to always be the history of a people, whether God's people or anybody else. Prosperity always leads to apostasy, away from God. All right, now a second stage of this now, you become really as a brothel. You become rather as harlots. And it came to pass, after all thy wickedness, woe, woe unto thee, saith the Lord Jehovah, that thou hast built unto thee a vaulted place, and hast made thee a lofty place in every street. Now some think those are brothels. I doubt it. I think they're places of idolatry, where they set up images there. Thou hast built thy lofty place at the head of every way, and hast made thy beauty an abomination, and hast opened thy feet to everyone that passeth by, and multiplied thy whoredom. Now think of the awfulness of that picture. You're God's own people now. Here you're building these altars and sacrificing to everything that comes by. As a harlot will open her feet to every person that comes along. That's the picture. Repulsive, yes. Ugly, yes. But Ezekiel, when he does a thing, he does it upright. I mean, he makes it stand out. Whether he's acting something out or whether he's telling them what it is, he is a master act. Thou hast also committed fornication with the Egyptian. Now that was probably political fornication. I doubt it. I don't think that they ever adopted many of the, they did, the sacred bull was from Egypt, but primarily I think their compromise in those later years was political. I think Isaiah and other prophets point that out. Right? And it's multiplied by whoredom to provoke me to anger. Behold, therefore, I have stretched out my hand over thee, and have diminished thine ordinary food, and delivered thee under the will of them that hate thee, the daughter of the Philistines, that are ashamed of thy lewd ways. In other words, I don't know that they're, but at any rate, what he's saying is you've outdone the Philistines. Even they haven't gone as far as you have in this. Amos, back on in the first chapter 2 of Amos, he really presents what these nations around them were doing. Right? Thou hast played the harlot also with the Assyrians. That probably was political under Ahaz and Manasseh, who followed him, because thou wast unstable. Yea, thou hast played the harlot with them, and yet thou wast not satiated. That is, with all thou satisfied, rather. Thou satisfied. Thou hast moreover multiplied thy whoredom under the land of traffic, under Chaldea, and yet thou wast not satisfied herewith. However, I think that's political, probably, more so than religious. Now, they had adopted the religion of the Canaanites round about them. Now, they made alliances with these heathen nations that I told them not to do, and all of that indicates a lack of faith in God, turned away from Him. How weak is thy heart, saith the Lord Jehovah, seeing thou doest all these things, the work of an impotent harlot, in that thou buildest thy vaulted place at the head of every way, and makest thy lofty place in every street, and hast not been as a harlot, in that thou scornest high. Now notice here. Here is worse than that. A harlot may be, excused, but we might justify it. On the ground of something to eat, of necessity. You don't. You've gone worse than that. You've actually paid them to come in and commit harlotry with you, to come in to you. Now, notice what it says here. A wife that committeth adultery, that taketh strangers instead of a husband. They give gifts to all harlots, but thou givest thy gifts to all thy lovers, and bribest them, that they may come in unto thee on every side for thy whoredoms. In other words, you are paying them to come in instead of you selling yourself for hire. You're paying them to come in. Now, that's a worse act. I've never seen anybody accused of that before, but that's what they were doing. And thou art different from other women. Now, Jerusalem always said they were different. Yes, God said, you are different. Wherein are you different? You're different in that you pay others to commit harlotry with you instead of selling yourself as a harlot. Notice that. And thou art different from other women in thy whoredoms, in that none followeth thee to play the harlot, and whereas thou givest hire, and no hire is given unto thee, therefore thou art different. Yes, I'll admit you're different. You're claiming to be a people different from all others. The church can make the same claim. Now, when it begins to act like others and court the friendship of others and all these sort of things, then it's following this pattern here of paying instead of receiving hire. And it's a very, as I said, it's a revolting picture. But I want to tell you, yes, the lesson across that surely does. Wherefore, O harlot, I know that expression, what do you call it? Wherefore, O harlot, hear the word of Jehovah. Thus saith the Lord Jehovah. Now here are several things. Because thy filthiness was poured out, and thy nakedness uncovered through thy whoredoms and thy lovers. First was thy filthiness poured out. Second, your nakedness was uncovered. Third here, and because of all the idols of thy abominations, and fourth, and for the blood of thy children, if thou didst give unto them, therefore. Now there are four charges God makes against them. Because of your filthiness and your nakedness and all the idols and the abominations and the blood of your children you sacrificed, therefore. Behold, I will gather all thy lovers with whom thou hast taken pleasure, and all them that thou hast loved, with all them that thou hast hated, I will even gather them against thee on every side, and will uncover thy nakedness unto them, that they may see all thy nakedness. In other words, I'm going to bring them against you, those with whom you've committed political harlotry or religious harlotry. I'm going to bring all of them and surround you with it, and they're going to see the nakedness of you when I strip you of everything you've got and carry you away into captivity. Now this, you talk about a preacher of doom. Don't you imagine those people, that Ezekiel, I don't like to hear him. Why, he's so pessimistic. He never says anything. You know, the idea of preaching today is make people feel good, make them happy. Don't preach anything that make them feel good. Make them feel good and in it. I don't think Ezekiel would care much about popularity. Do you? No, I don't think he sought the popularity of anybody. And so he's telling them that. I'm sure I can just see those people. I don't like to hear him. He's pessimistic. He's a preacher of doom. He can't say anything good. I never feel good when I hear him preach. Well, I don't think preaching necessarily is a make you feel good. It should. If I'm doing right, it'll make me feel good. Even if I preach judgment and I'm to escape that judgment, I feel good because I will escape the judgment, don't you see? So I think there's a good side to any kind of preaching, but not always. Sometimes it's the other way. And I will judge thee as women that break wedlock and shed blood are judged. And what is the penalty of adultery and of murder? Stoning to death. Right, I'm going to judge you as those entitled to that. And I will bring upon thee the blood of wrath and jealousy. That's the blood of judgment against adultery and against murder. I will also give thee into their hand, and they shall throw down thy vaulted place and break down thy lofty places, and they shall strip thee of thy clothes and take thy fair jewels, and they shall leave thee naked and bare. They shall also bring up a company against thee, and they shall stone thee with stones and thrust thee through with their swords. Now that, you see, was the penalty back in the law there for murder and adultery. So I'm going to bring these, and they'll be my instrument in executing the judgment against you for what you've done. And they shall burn thy houses with fire, and execute judgments upon thee in the sight of many women. And I will cause thee to cease from playing the harlot, and I shall also give no hire any more. Now here is the first ray of hope in the whole chapter. Up until this point, it's all been doom, destruction, damnation. So will I cause my wrath toward thee to rest, and my jealousy shall depart from thee, and I will be quiet, and will be no more angry. Now this is God's lawful and legal, rightful anger and jealousy at what they've done to him. It's divine wrath. Remember that. Well, God says, I'll be quiet, and will be no more angry, because thou hast not remembered the days of thy youth, but hast raged against me in all these things. Therefore, behold, I also will bring thy way upon thy head, saith the Lord Jehovah, and thou shalt not commit this lewdness with all thine abominations. So, now that's not the picture. Alright? Now, that's the first allegory. That's the allegory of the foundling child that was discovered by Jehovah, trained and brought up, and then at the age of love was covered with beautiful clothes and ornaments, made and put a crown on her head, made her his royal wife. Now here's the way she's turned out. She's forsaken God. She's become a harlot. She's committed great whoredom in all the land. Now then, God says, you're no longer fit for anything but to be cast out. But actually, class, the execution of God's wrath here is an expression of love, because he's trying to bring them to repentance and back to him, at least a remnant of them. So always back of judgment. There is a purpose in the mind of God in that. And there will be when the judgment falls on this nation someday. Now come the two daughters. Behold, everyone that useth proverbs, shall use this proverb saying unto thee, against thee, saying, as is the mother, so is the daughter of thy mother, that loatheth her husband and her children. And thou art the sister of thy sisters, who loathe their husbands and their children. Your mother was a Hittite, your father an Amorite, in other words, in your action and conduct. Now the point is here now. Now here the nation is the mother, Jehovah the father, but she's committed adultery. Now that's Hosea's picture also, of Gomer. Now that God's going to cast them out now, and all of that. But she had two daughters. Now the two daughters would be Judah and Israel, and they're separated there. So now deals with them. Of course you say, well, that's what that figure kind of mixed. Well, maybe, but I don't think so. I see the point here that here the whole nation, Jerusalem stands for the whole people. Now then, here with a split from the whole nation, you have two nations, which you liken unto two daughters, don't you see? I don't know what he said about them. And thine elder sister is Samaria, that is Judah's elder sister is Samaria, that dwelleth at thy left hand, she and her daughters, that is her people, and thy younger sister that dwelleth at thy right hand is Sodom. Now you stand at Judah here, and as you look as you look east, to the north of you would be Samaria, and to the south of you would be Sodom. So he likened Sodom unto them all. I want you to note the ugliness of this picture. It is Sodom and her daughters. Yet as thou not walked in their ways, nor done after their abominations, but as if that were their little thing, thou wast more corrupt than they in all thy ways. Now you couldn't bring a greater charge than that. You were worse than Samaria, who were carried away into Assyrian captivity 100 years before this. You were worse than Sodom, whom God destroyed back in Genesis 18 in the days of Abraham, because of his wickedness. You were worse than either one of them. I think that the ground of their being worse, class, is they had opportunity. That God did more for them and gave them more opportunity than the others had. Now, when I have a greater opportunity, a greater blessing, God does more for me, and I reject and spurn that, that's worse than the fellow that does the same thing but never had that opportunity, don't you see? And so that's why I think that the United States people say, well, God never destroyed this, they were much better than those other nations. I don't know that we are in God's sight. So think of the opportunity. We began this nation, began on religious freedom and right and all that, and was religious and respected God. I know the people were not perfect by any means. But what have we become today? God's ruled out of all of our thinking. You can't even have a little prayer in school. Not that I care, that doesn't make a difference to me, but it just shows the attitude and disposition, what I'm saying. Right? Without a greater opportunity, I think our sin is worse than the others there. So it was then with Judah here. So it is the church of the Church of Christ, the Lord's Church. Our great opportunities, our great blessings, put a greater responsibility on us than on any people around about us. I don't think we recognize that as a people as a whole. All right, let me move on quickly now. They're more corrupt in all thy ways. As I live, saith the Lord Jehovah, Sodom thy sister hath not done, she and her daughters, as thou hast done. Thou and thy daughter, behold, this was the iniquity of thy sister Sodom, pride, fullness of bread, and prosperous ease was in her and in her daughters. Neither did she strengthen the hand of the poor and needy. In other words, that's even considered greater than I probably led to Sodom and all that, for they left God out. Now, of course, in that day, back in Genesis, Sodom was destroyed because of homosexuality. Here he said it was pride that cast God out, and led them, and gave up God, and then did what they did, and that's what Paul said in Romans 1, that knowing God, they glorified it not as God, neither gave thanks. Right? And they were haughty and committed abomination before me. Now, there you come to your homosexuality. They were haughty and committed abomination before me. Therefore I took them away as I saw good. Neither hath Samaria committed half of thy sins. They come out of Sodom up till now. But thou hast multiplied thine abominations more than they. and it justified thy sisters by all thine abominations which thou hast done. Now you couldn't have, that's the greatest charge God could have brought against his people. You're worse than Samaria, you're worse than Sodom. I destroyed both of them, and you're going to get by any better. All right? Thou also bear thou thine own shame, in that thou hast given judgment for thy sisters through thy sins that thou hast committed, more abominable than they. In other words, you judge them better than you by what you have done. They are more righteous than thou. Yea, be thou also confounded, and bear thy shame, in that thou hast justified thy sisters. Now comes then a word of hope, comes in this. And I will turn now here, that this is the longest word of hope we've had in the book of Ezekiel thus far. And I will turn again their captivity, the captivity of Sodom and her daughters, and the captivity of Samaria and her daughters, and the captivity of the captives in the midst of them, that thou mayest bear thine own shame, and mayest be ashamed because of all that thou hast done, in that thou art a comfort unto them. Now notice why you're going to turn that captivity, when you're going to do it. Thy sisters, Sodom and her daughters, shall return people to our God. So here under the new covenant, those that practice the very things that God condemned them for back yonder now have access unto God through that covenant. And I will establish my covenant with thee, and thou shalt know that I am Jehovah. That thou mayest remember and be confounded and never open thy mouth anymore because of thy shame. Don't ever mention it. When I have forgiven thee all that thou hast done, saith the Lord Jehovah. Now, there are two or three things in here that I think are very important to remember and to note. I got a little fast. I thought it was later than that. But I think we ought to note that here, this allegory reveals how terrible sin can be in the sight of God. It also reveals to us the necessity of judgment. Now, I'm preaching on Romans. When I come to the 11th chapter of Romans, Paul in 9, 10, and 11 of Romans, he points out there why it's just for him to cast off the nation Israel. See, they never could understand why God cast off. Paul is showing there in those chapters the ground and the justice of God's rejecting them as a nation there. Right? So in that you see the wickedness of the Jews back there at that time, and God's right to reject them. That's the same thing back there that Ezekiel is trying to point out. Now remember that according to Jeremiah 24, there were two baskets of fruit. One basket good fruit, the other rotten, fit for nothing to cast out. Represented the Jews that were carried away into captivity, the good ones, through whom God would bring back the remnant. The Jews who remained in Jerusalem were so rotten, they would be destroyed. They were not fit for anything. Now, Ezekiel's mission, as I've mentioned several times, I'm going to keep on mentioning it until we get it fixed in our mind, that Ezekiel's mission was to the people to prepare them for the coming of those Jews by pointing out and making them realize the terribleness of the sins of the Jewish people, their idolatry, the false prophets, and listening to them, all of those things, and their alliances with foreign nations. In other words, rejecting God. Now, he wants them to see that. Therefore, then, what God does is a just recompense of their reward, of that which they had cunning. Right? So, if one will study his Bible as he ought to learn his truth, he will recognize with Paul in Romans 2 there, when it says the righteous judgment of God. When I look at what God judges and what leads him to condemn individuals, I in that recognize the righteousness of that judgment. That God is absolutely righteous. So when an individual before God in judgment hears the doom depart me accursed into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels, he's going to go away saying, I got a just judgment. It was a righteous judgment. God did only that which is absolute infinite righteousness could do consistent with his being as God. God cannot deny himself. God cannot lie. God cannot do anything contrary to his own absolute righteousness and being. Well, I think that's what he's saying. Now, another thing I want to get out of this lesson. I want to get from this last part of it, God's going to make another covenant, a new covenant, an everlasting covenant. That in this covenant, people as bad as the Sodomites, as bad as the Israelites, as bad as the Judahites, as bad as all those heathen and pagan and people back yonder, that it doesn't make any how bad one is. God will save that individual under the blood of the new covenant if you come unto him in penitence and faith and belief. Now, I think that's another lesson we get there. And I've said many times, I repeat it, I don't believe that there's any sin that a person can commit. What God will forgive that in the blood of Christ if that individual will genuinely repent and turn to him in faith to do his will from that moment on. I just don't think there's any sin. Well, I think old Hussein. Hussein read his Bible. That's all that he's done. And he reads his Bible and said, I've been wrong. God's offered me salvation through Christ. I'm going to accept him, whatever the price may be in the cost, and I'm going to turn to him in faith. I think God will forgive him as quick as he would any person here in Oracle here that might want to print turn to it. And as we study, keep these things in mind as we're preaching from the book of Romans, as I'm trying to emphasize what Paul emphasized there, the grace of God, the blood of Christ, and the faith of the individual. And in the lesson this morning, all of these meet in one's death and baptism. God's made it possible. And no sinner is beyond the power. Old Jews crucified him on the day of Pentecost. You murdered him, Peter says, whom you murdered. But now then, repent and turn to God and he'll forgive you. God forgave me even those who murdered his own son. He forgave them. So when we study the heinousness and the terribleness of sin, and then we turn to God's love and willingness to forgive, then we come to appreciate the majesty and the greatness of his grace, his love, his mercy, his long-suffering, his desire to bring us that man back to himself. And to me, this is a message that the world needs today. It doesn't need entertainment. These preachers, I talked to my son last night, talking about when I made a talk there, how he started off and didn't know foolishness at all. Well, so many of those preachers that come to Abilene, they feel that they've got to start off with a lot of entertainment. That's my son's objection to the preacher that University Church where he attends. He said he feels like he got to start off with some joke and entertain people. We're not in the entertainment business. There's nothing entertaining about sin nor the blood of Jesus Christ. It's all the sin condemns and the blood redeems. And that's what we need to learn. So we've got no place for any of this other in our religion of Jesus Christ. It's a glorious religion. Now, what I've been preaching, we've been reading mostly in this book, and thus far has been doom. Now, you're going to see it get a little brighter and a little brighter. This is the turning point in this chapter today. The height of condemnation, but also the introduction of hope. So it's a great book of doom. God never condemns without offering a ray of hope along with it. I don't know how much you've studied the prophets in your life, but here's a thing that's impressed me. And every one of the prophets that deals with the doom of sin and God's people, that talk about God's people, there's always a ray of hope and light shining through it. Look for that in your study. Well, the class is excused. We'll take up a couple of chapters for next time.